How's it going, sir?
Good, man.
Welcome.
How you holding up?
I'm fine so far. I had to pee, but I got that taken care of. Let me get you. Awesome. Can you get a little bit closer on mic there?
Hopefully that's better.
Okay.
Okay.
We're checking your levels.
Woo.
Doug just said he's donating $7,000. I think he's trying to get you.
I love you, Doug. So I got you a little care package just to keep you going throughout the 18 hours. So we'll get to that later.
Okay.
Because I don't want to reach over the table with it.
Oh, sure. I understand.
I'm afraid. So, yeah.
I don't want to eat into your time. I wanted to read some of the names. Jonas Kalich, thank you for your donation. Grant Malfitano, thank you. Gil Burt, who donated $50 because I said JB was right about Independence Day resurgence. Matt Sollenberger, thank you. Brett Peterson, thank you. Dennis Atherton, who donated the $50 because I gave him a shout out. Wolfgang Bamer, Saul Ott, thank you. Diana Rodheim, thank you so much. Jason Kreckel, thank you. Gil Burt, thank you, because Jan, he wrote. Derek Anderson, Adam Armour, Rick S., John Murphy, William Lanham, Ryan Hafner, Heath Holland, Daniel Epler, Rick S., Joey Bag of Donuts, Eric Shanabra, Gil Burt, Alex Lawson from F This Movie, thank you. Mike Mignella. And then we're caught up. But thank you all for your donations since the last time we read donations. All of
Sweet.
Those have come in. So you guys are kicking so much ass.
Very
thank
much
you.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone.
All right. So we're talking about 1990, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
Here's something I discovered.
What's that?
It's hard to go back and find like your favorite movies of a given year.
Okay.
Because when we do our best of lists, there's such a diary of like who we were that year.
Right.
And the experience we had of a movie in the moment, as opposed to a movie we've lived with for 25 years.
Right.
Also, that movie making was very different then, because you didn't have, it's like pre-Sex Lies and Videotape, technically Sex Lies and Videotape was like 89.
Yep.
But its impact hadn't yet
broken out.
Yeah. So it's almost all still just like kind of studio product. There's not a ton of like little indie movies that are these great little gems, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because I wanted to do this because I've never tried it before. I've never
gone back and tried to pick my favorites.
So the thing that I found interesting about it was my list is just so on its face conventional. I feel like there's just like overwhelming favorites from a lot of people. There's no like diamonds in the rough necessarily. Like if a movie hasn't been discovered in 26 years, it's probably just not going to get discovered. And I was thinking, like, where are the Reversal of Fortunes or the Awakenings or movies that like I've watched over the years and really liked, but like I think if I were reviewing movies in 1990, they probably would have made my list.
Right.
But now I'm just like, no.
I still have never seen either of those movies.
Awakenings is pretty solid.
I can't do it knowing that he goes back.
It's a pretty wonderful movie. It's one of the three best Penny Marshalls.
League of Their Own.
She had a run there for a
Riding
while.
In Cars with Boys.
I didn't see that one.
Me either. Okay. Renaissance Man.
I like that one, actually.
I've never seen it.
Okay.
That's Marky Mark, though, right?
It is. Yeah. That's his first movie.
Was it really?
Yeah.
That was before Basketball Diaries?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was 94, and then Basketball Diaries was 95.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's like, I think we just found a Transformer. Anyway.
You want to do some drugs? Yeah. So how do you want to do this? Did you like rank yours?
Not really. Okay. I have a one and a two.
Okay.
For sure.
All right.
And then not much beyond that.
Let's start with a one and a two. Let's start there, because I feel like I would rather, in the time that we have, because I have a tendency to like
I might have a top five.
I have a tendency to like run long with my shows, I feel like.
Sure.
So I don't
we
want
to. We got B cramps at 11.
Yeah, I know. So we got.
Can't bump the B cramps.
Can't bump the cramps. So, cramps bumps. Let's start with our ones and then just go down.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I think our one is going to be the same.
Is yours one, Goodfellas?
Yes.
Mine is not.
What?
There's a movie I like more than Goodfellas.
I think your one is my three then.
Joe versus Volcano. Yeah.
Yeah.
I recognize that Goodfellas is probably the better film. It's a masterpiece. I have nothing bad to say about Goodfellas. But if we're talking about the movie that I go back to more often, the movie that I get more out of, in terms of if Jan was still here, we could talk about, you know, the human experience of Joe versus the Volcano, because that for me is a movie like Blade Runner. For her, just when Tom Hanks sees the moon and says thank you for my life, it's like one of the best things in a movie ever.
Now I feel like immediately rushing home and watching that movie.
That movie's amazing, and was so dismissed when it came out and so kind of shit on, and it breaks my heart. And I feel like in recent years people have kind of come around on it and been
it's
like
on cable every once in a while now. That's a movie that I I'm really kind of happy that, like, my family gravitated to, like, really early on, because that was still at the age where, like, I was 8 and my parents would decide which movies we would go to see.
Yeah.
And I didn't have much say in it. And they would take us to, like, The Burbs and True Beverly Hills and Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah.
Like, any type of light comedy type of thing that wasn't rated R. And Joe versus the Volcano, I remember, I just thought it was funny because all the orange pop jokes. At the,
which I have to say, you know, as a kid, I totally get it, but that's my least favorite stuff in the movie.
Okay. And, but the thing I love about Joe versus the Volcano is I can't point to many movies that do this, but I watch it and I think that is such a screenwriter's movie.
And sure.
It's also like the same director as the screenwriter.
Yeah, John Patrick Shanley. But I also think it's such a directed movie.
Yeah, like, it's definitely like well made for sure. Like, well, he's got an eye for direction. It's not just
100%. And like takes big chances. It was like, hey, I may only get to do this once. Mm-hmm. So I am going to do the longest, like, that boom shot where with Old Man River when they're filing. Oh my God, I could just go on and on about how much, but that movie is so like formal, in its construction, so formally well made.
Yeah. It's very old fashioned.
Like, oh my gosh. The use of widescreen in that movie is so amazing. I saw when I was a kid, when it showed up on like pay-per-view, I asked my mom, can I rent it, you know, and record it? 'Cause I loved Tom Hanks, and like, it just went so over my head. You know what I mean? Like, I liked it. I was like, oh, Tom Hanks. And that same girl is playing three different parts. The girl from Interspace.
I'm a flibbity gibbet.
Exactly. I can't decide which is my favorite Meg Ryan in that movie.
I like the...
Dark Meg Ryan.
It's not the first one. It's not the Office Meg Ryan.
No, Dark Meg Ryan is like one. Redhead.
Yeah,
the
redhead is the one tortured. That I, like, if I went to the dock and saw blonde Meg Ryan with the yacht and everything, I would be like, nope. I'm staying here with Dark Meg Ryan.
That is truly not just one of my, you know, my favorite movie of 1990, but one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Like, I just love it. But Goodfellas number one for you, which obviously I can't
argue. Goodfellas is number one for me. It's the movie that we've talked before about how, like, a Spielberg or a Tarantino can make movies just look effortless.
Yeah.
And that Goodfellas is Martin Scorsese. I won't even say at the height of his power, because he's been at the height of his power so many times.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just flows so beautifully. Like, the editing and it's the pace of that movie is great, especially when the pace becomes the character's point of view, like in the last act of the movie,
right,
where it gets more rushed and more hurried. And the thing that I think everything with Goodfellas gets its fair share of credit because it's universally like a beloved movie.
Yeah.
But the thing that I always come to is just how great Ray Liotta is in that movie.
Never better.
Yeah, he's never been better, but he's doing like two different performances with the narration and then with like just being on screen. And it makes you just, I don't know. I mean, like, I was really happy when he came back. He kind of had his comeback with like Blow and Narc. He had a few down years like with Turbulence and like a few other
movies. Yeah, but I would still maintain he's probably the best thing in Copland. Maybe I haven't seen Copland in a while.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Michael Rapaport's in that movie.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. And Annabella Sciorra.
Yeah.
So
the hand that rocks the cradle. So, yeah. She's one of those actresses where you could just name her movies and it's funny.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, hey, she's in this.
Yeah, she is.
She's in a movie that you love, though. Jungle Fever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do love Jungle Fever. That's a great movie.
90s Spike Lee joint.
90s Spike Lee joint. Except not good anymore because MTV thinks it's dated.
What?
You didn't read that article from like a month ago?
No.
MTV says... Jungle Fever at 25, hilariously outdated.
Oh, and yay. I'm just like, we're older and let's laugh at things.
I'm just like, MTV.
Time has passed. We're better.
I don't mean to ever tell somebody, like, stay in your lane, but your music television just maybe don't have an opinion about movies if you're going to write silly things like that.
Was it like MTV.com?
Yeah.
Was it Amy Nicholson?
No.
Okay.
No, it wasn't her. It was some guy that I'd never heard of.
Speaking of Amy Nicholson, does not like Goodfellas.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Did you ever listen to that episode of the podcast? She co-hosts The Canon.
Amy Nicholson and Devin Faraci are, I enjoy their writing, but they give me fits with their with their interpretations. And
it's an interesting discussion. It's the first episode, and it's like, I disagree almost 100% with everything she's saying. And yet at times, I'm like, okay, but I see... the point you're making, even if I don't totally agree with it, like I do see the point you're making. So it's I'm constantly torn back and forth. They just did a show on Reanimator. It was the same thing. I was like, I don't disagree with you, but like I so strongly disagree with you.
Yeah,
it's a hard line to walk.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Question for you: Goodfellas or Godfather?
Oof. I mean, it's apples and oranges. If I can only have one for the rest of my life,
yeah,
Godfather.
Okay. I'm the same, but I'll take Goodfellas over Godfather 2.
As would I.
Yeah.
Without any hesitation, actually. And Godfather 2 is very good.
Oh, yeah.
But it's Goodfellas, amazing. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
Goodfellas or Taxi Driver?
Goodfellas. But I would take Taxi Driver over Raging Bull.
Interesting. This is a fun game.
Yeah.
I think I would go Taxi Driver, but they're both awesome. And again, the same guy has made... multiple masterpieces, which there are so few directors who you can say that about.
Definitely. Okay.
So we both have the same one. Goodfellas is my two. Or we don't have the same one.
Goodfellas
is my two. What's your two then?
My two is Jacob's Ladder.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't even put that on my list, but
interesting.
It has been so long
since
I have seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I need to revisit it. Actually, my plan was maybe for Scary Movie Month to do a Jacob's Ladder show.
You are a bastard person, and I'll tell you why. Because I suggested that
for real?
2 years ago, and you kind of laughed it off.
Oh, I did not mean
to
at all.
You did.
I apologize. This October, we will do a Jacob's Ladder show.
Sweet.
You and me, yo.
All right, I will keep it brief then for Jacob's Ladder, but I just
you guys got to wait until October to hear the rest. By the way, donate now.
I'll just throw out this one thing. Such an interesting movie in the career filmography of Adrian Lyne, who only made sex movies. Indecent Proposal, Fatal Attraction, Unfaithful, what else?
Flashdance. Not a sex movie,
but there's it's
Lolita. Did you mention Lolita?
No.
His remake of Lolita.
I didn't mention the remake of Lolita,
which I never saw.
Was Jagged Edge a sex movie?
It's like sort of. It's more of just like a thriller, but I guess.
Okay, but
it's the closest to like an early '80s erotic thriller.
Gotcha. Okay, so he had his niche, and Jacob's Ladder is just like this complete anomaly to that. It's like his Majestic. but I love Jacob's Ladder just because I find it. In the same way as I do The Sixth Sense, I find it very moving by the end.
Yeah.
And it's the best movie as a nightmare that I think I've seen.
Okay.
Where, I mean, like, there's certain movies like Nightmare on Elm Street that sustains that for bits and pieces, but then they go back to reality, the waking hours
right,
and
right,
everything.
Right.
But Jacob's Ladder is almost like a feature-length hallucination.
Yeah.
And it's so...
I don't want to get into spoilers.
Yeah,
but.
it's so impressive to me. So I'll save that for October.
Interesting though that guy never made horror movies and then made
it's amazing
one that's awesome.
It's such an amazing movie, and the horror movies that usually get to me the most are the ones that are so empathetic to their lead character, and then also the ones where you could tell that like the filmmaker doesn't. Like want to punish the character like by
right,
film's
right, right.
end. There's a reason why they're going through all this.
Yes.
So
yeah, that's totally true from what I remember of that movie.
Yeah.
So my one is
JV the V.
Yep.
My two is GF.
Mm-hmm.
My three is Wild at Heart.
Okay. It's not on my list, but it's a movie I like very much.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a movie that I like more and more each time I see it, because it was another movie that apparently in 1990, this is when I started like having some autonomy and being like, I'll get this movie off of pay-per-view and record it. And this one, I don't know if my mom's listening, I hope not, but I don't think I even asked permission. I just was like, I'm ordering Wild at Heart and recording it. And I, at that point, I don't think I had seen any David Lynch.
Okay.
Because I was like 11 or 12.
Yeah.
12, maybe. And again, just I did not know what to make of it. Like, I understood the sex. I understood Willem Dafoe blowing his head off.
Yeah.
Like, but the more I come back to it, the more I just kind of fall in love with it.
Yeah. It's a great movie. I think I saw it. Maybe I was in my early 20s.
Okay.
It was like right after college, around that point in time. I think the Music Box showed it, and I just watched it then.
That's the way to see it. I've never seen it theatrically.
Yeah, it was really cool. The thing that I like about it is it's so, for a movie that's kind of hard to put your arms around, it's kind of not also, because it starts out with just crazy violence. Crazy Nicolas Cage, like, sort of doing an Elvis thing in that movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, what I've heard is like he's Elvis and she's Marilyn Monroe.
Okay,
this is like the movie that they never made. She's not doing a Marilyn Monroe impression, but just sort of this idea of like a little bit of like a white trash sex pot sort of thing. I don't know.
Definitely, but I mean, like, Laura Dern is adorable in that movie, and she's such a good actress, and.
It's big time Dern right there.
Some great Dern. That's some quality Dern. And the scene, for all of its, you know, the William Dafoe scene where he shoots his head off and everything like that, for all of that stuff, the scene that I always come back to is just her screaming for Nicolas Cage in the convertible at the end.
Yeah.
Like, they just wanting to be together.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for love stories, and that's
and it's like such a specific. It's like, this is the David Lynch version of a love story.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie.
It really is. Good. And again, had I made this list in 1990, not on the list.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't put it on my list. Now I feel like an idiot for
it's
not
okay.
putting it on my
Listen,
list.
Listen, there's no judgment here.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
Next, number four would be Misery.
Okay.
Which is a movie that I hadn't even seen until two scary movie months ago.
Okay.
But I just immediately was sucked into being in Stephen King land.
Yeah.
And I we've talked about that. I just find it's like a blanket just putting it over me. And it's an amazing James Caan performance. For as much as Kathy Bates gets all of the accolades, and she got the an Oscar for that movie, I think.
She did.
Yeah. James Caan is just so... it's funny, because one thing that I've noticed more in recent years is... physical performance and physicality to how much they can make a performance effective, and kind of similar to like Blake Lively in The Shallows. It's impressive that you can keep an audience. Anytime you can keep an audience's interest when you're so immobile, and you're kind of just doing, you know, facial expressions or tics or cadences in your sentences in order to keep an audience invested. And James Caan, I don't think, gets enough credit for it. It's so atypical of a James Caan type of performance for a lot of his movies. So that's one that I just am really looking forward to coming back to probably this October again. And I'm really happy that I kind of just... there's another movie from 90 that I just have never seen, even though I've meant to see a billion times, is Tremors.
Oh, yeah,
and
that movie's
Misery
awesome.
Misery is one where I just finally said, fuck it, I just need to sit down and watch Misery. So I'm glad that I did.
Misery's great, and again, makes me sad because Rob Reiner was just hitting home runs, like movie after movie, and it's him kind of doing a version of a Hitchcock movie and doing it very well, I think, the way he moves the camera. I mean, you can kind of tell that that's what he studied, and he's not the first person you would think of to make that movie,
no.
You know, especially given his output at the time.
And it does suggest that he was a guy who was able to adapt to other genres and just a good filmmaker. And that seems to have, I don't know if that muscle has atrophied or just, I don't know what it is. But.
Here's a theory that I wonder what you think of. It was in the De Palma documentary. He kind of posits that filmmakers make their best movies in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And then after that, they kind of just don't maybe have the same juice anymore. So do you think that's maybe what happened to Rob Reiner? Or I don't think that he's a personal filmmaker in the sense that he ran out of things to say necessarily.
No,
he's more of like a journeyman.
Yeah. He was like a Ron Howard.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. So
but
I,
better, yeah. I think for a time, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So what do you think of that? Do you think that directors just kind of have,
I don't
that
know, because there's the
core period like baseball players do, and then they,
but we just finished talking about Scorsese, yeah, you know, and that dude's, yeah, in his 70s and making The Wolf of Wall Street, so
true,
there's going to be exceptions to anything. I don't know, I mean, yeah, it may be true of De Palma, you know,
yeah.
Which may be why he said that,
possibly.
Have you ever read like any of the history on Misery?
Me at Reed.
They went to every star in Hollywood.
Interesting.
William Goldman writes about it in
for the
James Caan role.
Oh, for the James,
yeah,
Caan role. Okay.
I think Rob Reiner knew pretty early that he wanted Kathy Bates. He had seen her on Broadway, and he wanted Annie Wilkes to be an unknown.
Yeah.
So he knew about Kathy Bates, but he wanted a star in the bed, and it was Robert Redford and Warren Beatty and Al Pacino. Every person turned it down.
Yeah.
And that's how they ended up with James Caan, who like didn't have like the hottest career going at that time.
This was pre
Honeymoon in Vegas. When James Caan fever swept America.
I like Honeymoon.
I do too. It's a fun movie. Yeah. But I'm just making a joke about James Caan.
Sure. All right. So what's next on your
what
list?
What is next on my list?
Besides Ernest Goes to Jail.
Well, right. Here's what I discovered. There's a ton of movies from 1990 that I love,
yeah,
that I would feel very reluctant to like put on a 10 best list. I also discovered that, yeah, 1990 must have been the point at which my parents like split for good, because either Tremors or Flatliners was like the first movie that I went to see with my dad as like divorced dad taking his kids out, you know, that,
yeah,
sad scenario.
So you're happy that I picked 1990?
Yes, but like, okay. Predator 2 and, yeah, Kindergarten Cop. I mean, there are so many movies in 1990 that I went to see with my dad because that's what we did. He would come pick me up and we would go to the movies.
Yeah.
So I saw all of these movies are like first year divorce movies. So it's a toss up for me. So I'll just mention two, and I apologize if one of these is on your list.
No, that's fine.
The next spot for me would be either Miller's Crossing,
okay,
the Coen Brothers gangster movie, or Miami Blues.
I have not seen either of them.
They are both fantastic movies.
Good. I'm looking forward
so
to
it. So good. Now, you are not as big a Coen Brothers fan as I am.
I'm becoming one, though.
Okay.
There's certain movies that of theirs that I just don't get necessarily, but it's been a while since I've seen them. Thank you. Since I've seen them. So I'm looking
forward
to... Just
because it's an 18-hour thing doesn't mean we're not going to do the same
dumb
jokes.
I know. We got memes. So we have to... All right. Did you check off? It's been a while?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
For those of you playing FS Movie Bingo.
There we go. So, Blood Simple is one that I just have never connected to. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Blood Simple, really?
Burn After Reading, I've never connected to, but there's ones.
Yeah,
that
some
I
of those I get. Blood Simple, though.
There's ones that I love, though. Like I love Llewyn Davis. I love Fargo. I love No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
I love A Serious Man, which is very Coen Brothers-y.
Very.
I love. I don't need to keep doing my Coen Brothers resume. I don't have anything to prove to any of you.
Well, check both of those movies out. Miami Blues has one of the great all-time Alec Baldwin performances.
JJL
is in there. Yeah. Fred Ward is amazing in that movie. And it makes me sad because George Armitage directed it, and he made like that and Gross Point Blank.
Mm-hmm.
And then like not much else. He made the Big Bounce.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that doesn't hold a candle to Miami Blues and Gross Point Blank. Miami Blues feels very much like an Elmore Leonard movie, in that you don't exactly know where it's going. It feels... You don't feel safe ever watching it. I mean, it's a lot of it's a comedy. It's a dark comedy, but like you just, you, because you just have no idea what's going to happen. And that's rare in movies.
Next time it shows up on MGM HD, it will get,
get all over it. Will get recorded. There's a Blu-ray also from Shout Factory.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome, awesome.
So what's next for you?
Next for me would be Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
That was on my list of like movies I love, but I didn't put in my top 10.
It's number 5 for me. I've got no shame. So just wait till my number 6. So Gremlins 2, The New Batch is a movie that I liked when I was growing up. I watched a lot, but a recent viewing of it at a, what do they call it? The Massacre at the Portage Theater, at the Patio Theater, really kind of threw me over the edge on loving Gremlins 2 because that viewing came with added years of just appreciation and love for Joe Dante movies. And he's allowed to do anything he wants in that movie. It's this a perfect distillation of this filmmaker and his interests and what he likes and what he finds funny, and just being on the same wavelength as that, it really made me love it that much more. And I just marvel at so one joke that I made when I listened to your very 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 entertaining podcast on Independence Day Resurgence. I was like screaming into the radio, into whatever I was listening to it on, at JB. I'm just like, stop it. So I'm like, you're better than this. So I was like, do we need to have an intervention? Like, what's happening? So, it's like, don't call special effects special just because they're special effects.
Right, right, right.
Just call them effects.
Right,
if
sure.
they're not special, don't call them special. Gremlins 2 has special effects. Like, the work by Rick Baker is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And one of my biggest moments of regret ever is I was on vacation, and at the hotel I was staying at in California, they had a auction for Rick Baker puppets. And he was getting rid of just a bunch of stuff, I guess, in his warehouse. And they had puppets from Men in Black, and they had the fruit gremlin from Gremlins 2. And there was hardly anybody in there for the auction. And I was really like, should I go in there? But I didn't know if like anybody could just go in there.
Right, right, right.
And they weren't starting yet, and I had a plane to catch and all the whole big deal. But I was so bummed. It would have been so great to get like a piece of movie memorabilia, like
A Rick Baker piece too.
Piece, yeah.
I also love Gremlins 2. It is certainly the Joe Dante-iest movie of all of his movies. I remember going to see it because 1990, in addition to being the year of Divorce Dad, was the year that I was allowed to start walking to the theater down the street from my house by myself.
Also the year of Ghost Dad.
And the year of Ghost Dad. So I was able to just, anything that was PG or PG-13, I was going to see. So I saw Gremlins 2 a number of times, almost specifically because I wanted to see how that gag played where the projector breaks.
Yeah.
Because it worked every time. Like, seeing it the first time, I was like, oh, what? And then I figured it out. And then I kept going back just to see the audience turn around.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the fact that he redid it for video, but
it never has the same effect.
It doesn't have the Hulkster, you know. But yeah, Gremlins 2 is incredible. And I love the fact that, like, Gremlins was so hard to make because of the puppets. And then in Gremlins 2, he's like, let's have more puppets and different kinds. I mean, they had a higher budget, so I'm sure that helped. But like,
I think it's telling, too. It wasn't the same guy doing the...
Right, right, right. It wasn't Chris Whalas. It was Rick Baker.
Broken him, maybe.
He was off directing The Fly 2, I believe,
at that time.
I think so.
I didn't know that he directed Fly... They just talked about that in Shockwave.
They did.
All right.
Are you a fan of The Fly 2?
I've never seen it.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah.
It's been showing up on cable lately.
Yeah, I was thinking of watching it, but I never...
It's got Zuniga, so it's not a total
like
wash. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
She's the sure thing.
She is. Back to Rob Reiner.
Yeah.
What else is on my list? None of these are really in order.
Okay.
So I'll just throw out Total Recall.
That's, on my list. That
okay.
Is.
I just love it. I mean.
Yeah, there's not much to say. All right, T2 or Total Recall?
Ooh, fucking shit. I have such like fonder memories of T2. Kid me certainly would have said T2. Adult me might still say T2. That is Sophie's choice.
Yeah. I have probably.
Total Recall doesn't have like
one.
The dumb humor though.
Yeah.
That T2 has.
Can I talk about dumb humor for a second in
Please
action
do.
Movies?
Please.
All right. So over Fourth
We're
of July.
We're here for 18 hours.
Over 4th of July, this is a movie from 93, so I'm cheating, sorry. But I watched Nowhere to Run again. And,
Van Damme?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rosanna Arquette?
Oh, my God. That movie... Well, oh, my God, Rosanna Arquette. That's the movie where they really try to give Van Damme some one-liners.
Okay.
And he's got some of the worst one-liners in that movie. Like, there's
that
one
character
scene,
shouldn't have one-liners. That character should barely speak.
There's one part where he hits a guy, knocks him out with a 2x4, and he says, strike three, you're out. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
If anything, you should say, I got a hit. And then there was another one where he, Rosanna Arquette is getting bothered by two henchmen, and she's in her pickup truck. And then Van Damme shows up out of nowhere, and he's like, I'm the parking attendant, and you're disrupting my customers. And I'm just like, oh, my God.
Anytime it's, like, too wordy like that,
yeah.
The kiss-off line in Cliffhanger is, like, one of the worst in history because it's too much of a mouth. Keep your arms and legs inside the vehicle at all times. Like, he had to take four breaths to get that line out.
Yeah,
that means it's not a good, you know, it's not the same as, like, stick around.
But Nowhere to Run has one of my favorite kiss-off lines ever, which is, au revoir, fucker.
That one's pretty good.
It was pretty great.
Because it's French.
Yes, it is. So what else is on your list?
So besides Total Recall?
Besides Total Recall.
Quick Change.
Okay.
The Grifters.
Okay. I've seen Quick Change. I've not seen The Grifters.
Grifters is awesome.
It's on Netflix.
I had a dream the other night that John Cusack died, and I woke up crying, and I was like, that's weird.
That's really sad.
It is. He meant a lot to me at one point. He doesn't as much anymore, because
You're like, and then I watched Cell again.
Yeah, exactly.
I was okay.
Or anything he's made in the last 5 years. And King of New York.
Is that Jesse Bradford?
No, that's King of the Hill. King of New York is Christopher Walken,
okay.
Abel Ferrara.
Okay.
You ever see it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Terrific movie. And one of those movies where, like, everyone in it is an actor you know right before they became somebody that you know. So it's Wesley Snipes and Lawrence Fishburne and David Caruso. It's like all these guys that you know, but they hadn't quite broken out yet.
Okay.
Fantastic movie.
Good.
Great crime movie.
I will check that one out.
Then I have a long list.
All right.
Of movies that I love that I probably wouldn't put on a top 10. Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Okay.
Blind Fury, which I just saw for the first time with Rutger Hauer, which turns out to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Gremlins 2. I Come in Peace.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty Woman. Mm-hmm. You know I'm down with the Pretty Woman.
Yep.
Pump Up the Volume.
Yep.
Quigley Down Under.
Yep.
Which came dangerously close to just being in the actual top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Robot Jocks.
Mm-hmm.
Tremors. Arachnophobia. And Dark Man.
Okay. I've got... some that are not on either of those lists.
Nice.
Okay, so Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Okay.
It's the movie
Divorce
that got
Dad
me,
movie, but go ahead.
It's the movie that got me into horror movies. Like
that
big,
one is for real.
Big time.
No
kidding. So I always liked the Universal Monster movies. Like I would watch those on television, and I was obsessed with those golden books or whatever they called them. About Universal Monsters. But Tales from the Dark Side was the first movie that I like rented a lot. I rented it over and over again from the library in like the summer of 93. And that was like my gateway to other horror movies.
Wow.
So that's why I've always loved anthologies. And that's that and Tales from the Crypt have been like the two things that I point to as far as getting me into horror. So then I know I'm going to take shit for this. I love Dances with Wolves. I think it's a fantastic epic.
I haven't seen it in so many years.
I think it gets a lot of...
But that's why I didn't put it on the list, because I was like, I loved it when I saw it in 1990.
Yeah.
I'm not positive I've seen it since, so I'm not comfortable putting it on here.
Okay. No, fair enough. I mean, I just think it gets so much shit because it won Best Picture.
Because it wasn't Goodfellas, right?
Yeah, because Goodfellas didn't win. If it was just nominated, like...
Well, and it's
or...
and its politics are slightly outdated, because it's, again, that story of... And by the way, I mean, they were doing it as recently as Avatar, where it's like...
Yeah.
This person enters this community and then is the best version of the Last Samurai and Avatar, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And then Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2 was 1990?
That was 1990.
How did I not put that on the list?
So Die Hard 2.
Rennie Harlan had two movies out in 1990.
The thing I want to point out about Die Hard 2 is I've always known this, but I've never talked about it on the podcast. My favorite character actor of all time is Dennis Franz.
Interesting.
I don't know why, except to say it's probably predicated mostly on Sipowicz from NYPD Blue.
A show I've never seen.
Oh my God. You've even never seen NYPD Blue?
Even when Zach Morris joined, I did not watch it.
NYPD Blue is one of my, well, it's one of my favorite shows. I'm not going to sell you on it, because if you're not going to watch it, then that's fine. But
you're lost.
But I've been rewatching a lot of De Palma, so like him in Dressed to Kill, him Blowout, him in
so sleazy and great in those
him
movies.
Him in Die Hard 2. I mean, like, he's just so such a sleazeball. And like the fact that I'm like, it's funny because when I was younger, I'm just like, you think of yourself as like the hero of your own movie. And now I feel like I'm the character actor in my own movie. And I'm slowly turning into looking like Dennis Franz. So I'm just kind of like owning up to that.
Nice.
And now I'm just like, all right, well, in 10 years, I will look like him eating pancakes in City of Angels. And I just have to get married as quick as I can and then like sail off into the sunset. So Dennis Franz, you are the best. Donate money. And then lastly,
$20 for friends.
And then lastly, we did a whole show on it, so I'm not going to go into too much depth. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
I just think it's so much
That's
better than
a nostalgia
than
pick though, right?
It's no, it's just good.
Okay.
It's so much better than it has any right to be, just by comparison of like all the other turtle movies about
sure.
how bad
sure,
they are.
I agree with that.
And also I think that it's the true last entry in the Jim Henson movie canon in terms of his creature work.
Okay.
And I love it. And
that's because you never watched Farscape.
I'm going to not give you these.
No, I need gifts, those. I need those supplies.
Gifts. All right.
Kind of have
right.
to pee again, too. But
I don't like E.T.
Donate.
Donate.
$20 every time Adam
$10,000,
says
$10,000. I'm no like longer E.T. on the show. Like, if you don't want to hear the Jacob's Ladder show, $10,000.
We're going to start extorting people for things that they don't want to hear us talk
about. Do you want to see your mom again? $15,000.
For 10 grand, I will never make the era joke again.
Really?
Yeah.
But people like the era
joke. I'm just saying, if somebody hates it, put your money where your mouth is, fuckers.
There you go.
Here's something I noticed about 1990, though. Yeah. All the movies that we're talking about are like wide-release studio movies for the most part.
Yeah.
What happened? Because you've been to the movies this year.
Yeah.
What happened? Now, listen, some of this is, I know we have the perspective of time, right? Because in 1990, some
that.
Of these
it's
movies.
Not even that.
But I'm just saying, it's in 1990, some of these we would have seen and been like, what? Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, but I think enough of them I enjoyed even in 1990 and still continue to like as an adult that I don't understand how we've gotten to this point, which, by the way, is a larger conversation than the 13 minutes that we still have, but
I think we could knock it out in 13 minutes.
Let's do it.
All right. So the reason why movies are mainstream entertainment is so much worse now than in 1990, is that kind of what the question is?
I guess, yeah.
Okay.
Somebody's upset in the comments that we didn't mention Dick Tracy.
I like Dick Tracy.
Me too. It's fine.
That's I told you that it's become my water world. Where like even though I'm not sure I like it a lot,
I feel like watching it again.
I will watch it like I watched it this year.
Yeah.
So
we did a podcast on it. Yeah. I know. Check it out.
Yeah. So if you want to hear more about Dick Tracy, we'll do a second podcast if you donate $10,000.
I love that $10,000 is the completely unrealistic benchmark we've set. Yeah. But listen, we're trying to raise money for the Magnolia Tree Foundation. Go to fthismovie.net. There's links to our GoFundMe page. It's to raise money for breast cancer support and research. If you just are tuning in, I don't know why you would be, but that's who we are. That's why we're here doing this today. So $10,000, and we'll do another Dick Tracy show.
Ditto. That's from Ghost, 1990.
Which, by the way, in 1990,
hands
down my favorite movie, Ghost. Saw it 7 times in a theater, which at the age of 12 or 13 was unheard of, and I didn't want to see it. We did a podcast on Ghost, and I'm sure I've told all this story before, but like I was dreading that movie, and a group of my friends, including like maybe a girl I liked, were like, we're going to see Ghost at the mall. So I went, and I'm like, oh, I love Ghost, and I saw it like 7 more times. In 1990, it was my favorite movie of 1990 and maybe ever in 1990.
All right. I know that you wanted to talk about why movies are worse in 2016, but I want to
address the elephant in the room.
I want to talk about my ghost story.
Please do. Ghost story. Right, so, ghost stories with Adam Risky. Donate
$10,000 and I will leave your house. Ghost story. All right. The old Ridge Cinemas in Arlington Heights, my mom and sister went to go see Ghost, and my dad and I went to go see Arachnophobia. I was 8 years old. My dad said, "Are you going to be scared by this?" And I said, "No." We get to the movie. The first time a spider jumps in a jar, I turned to my dad. I said, "I think we better go now." So, like, we go into the theater for Ghost to try to find my sister and my mom. It's sold out. We can't find a seat. So we ended up going into the theater to see Taking Care of Business with Jim Belushi and Charles Grodin.
Yeah. Movie about the Philo facts.
Yes.
Written by J.J. Abrams.
That's right.
Hollywood's golden boy.
Yeah. Better than Mr. Destiny, also 1990.
I don't think I mind Mr. Destiny, but it's been a while.
Okay.
Been a while.
So we go to see Taking Care of Business. We don't even see all of Taking Care of Business because we had to meet up with my mom and my sister
right. When
Ghost ended, and he's never let me live that down since. That's not the story, though. The story is my mom and sister loved Ghost so much that they were like, "You guys have to see Ghost. You have to see it." So we went to another movie a couple weeks later to see Ghost. I loved it so much, and I think it's funny just because it connects with, like, young children. So, like, I was this 8-year-old kid and I loved Ghost. And I remember there was this girl named Kelly that I liked in my third grade class. And she was going to choose either me or this kid, Jordan. It was one of the two of us.
Ooh.
And then I felt like, and me and Jordan were friends. So it was kind of like the Patrick Swayze, Tony Goldwyn thing. So he kind of had
Jordan have you killed?
He had me killed. No. So he raised $10,000 to put a hit out on me. No. So I remember there was a line in Ghost where Patrick Swayze is like talking to somebody and he says, "You stay away from her."
Yes. I'm familiar with
okay.
it. And then he says it a second time louder, I believe.
Yeah. And I went up to Jordan and I said, "You stay away from her."
Did you then say, "Stay away from her"?
I didn't say it twice, but he didn't need me to say it twice. Because when you hear me
you're
say
throwing
that
once, Dennis Franz weight around, you're like, exactly. "Listen, I'm intimidating."
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just like, "You think that New York badge is going to get you a free lunch around here?"
And then Jordan was like, "What sets off the metal detectors first? The lead in your ass or the shit in your brains?"
And then I tore up his book report. I said, "Hey, it's Christmas." So, yeah, but, no, and then I got a kiss from Kelly later that year.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you were eight?
I was eight.
Man,
yeah.
You were so far ahead of me.
It's so, no, but I've gone so downhill since then.
I haven't, I was way older when I was kissed for the first time. Why did kids love Ghost? I mean, I think I understand why
Unchained
you and I
Melody?
Loved Ghost because
Is it
we.
The song?
I think in part, I think you and I both have very kind of romantic notions about
sure.
love, and I'm sure it played into that. Because now the stuff in Ghost that bugs me is, and this is very popular, around this time, and we've tried to codify it before, I know Doug and I have talked about it, like in Three Men and a Baby, or in Ted. Ted was like the most recent example where it's like you have this movie that's about this one concept, and then you need some third act drama. So like in Three Men and a Baby, they have to like,
mm-hmm.
catch drug dealers.
I remember this. You were talking about Ted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Kindergarten Cop, it's like that movie comes by it a little bit more honestly because like he is a cop, but you still have a shootout in like a boiler room at the end of this family comedy.
Yeah.
And Ghost is a little bit guilty of that where it can't just be this love story about these people and Patrick Swayze. It has to be like a murder mystery and mm-hmm. people getting glass dropped on them and killed, you know.
Yeah.
Very
I always
strange.
Thought that was like, yeah, for a PG-13 movie, I'm like, that's really violent.
Yeah.
For an ending.
Yeah.
All right. 1990 Demi Moore in Ghost or 1990 Julia Roberts and Pretty Woman?
Julia Roberts and Pretty Woman.
Yeah, that's how I would go to.
Okay. And I love Demi Moore in Ghost. Don't get me wrong.
All right.
But Julia Roberts, Pretty Woman is going to win.
Fair enough.
Almost every time. But then 91 happens, like just a year later.
Yeah.
And like 91 is this explosion of amazing movies, which isn't to say that there aren't that many in 1990, but honestly, with the exception of like Goodfellas and Joe versus the Volcano, I feel like those are the only two movies that I'm like, okay, I'm over the moon in love with those two movies.
Yeah. Totally.
There's lots of other movies that I like a lot or even love, but like those are the only two that really jump out as like, oh my God, these are movies I can't live without.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like 91 has more of them. But yeah, maybe I'm wrong.
91 was like every week had a movie that I could put in my top 10 list.
Yeah.
That year.
But it's the best year for action movies.
It's
ever.
It's pretty terrific.
Ever.
How are we looking on Bee Cramps?
We're good. We got about 5 minutes till Bee Cramps. Do you wanna pause real quick for a little break here that we have from some peeps?
Yeah, sure.
So here's the deal. I reached out to some of our podcast friends, mm-hmm, and asked them to record a message that we would be playing throughout the day. So let's play our first one. This comes from the Dorking Out podcast, and I will let them take it away.
And we're the hosts of...
Just kidding. Hold on. Let me back it up to the actual beginning. Hey, there it is. Okay. Here we go.
Hi there. Chris and Sonia here, and we're the hosts of Dorking Out, the podcast for people who like to dork out about the stories in pop culture and pretty much everything else that's worth dorking out about.
I just want to say a huge, big thank you to F This Movie for organizing this event for breast cancer. I am a 2-time breast cancer survivor, and it means a lot to me that my favorite podcast of all time is doing a fundraiser for breast cancer. It makes me feel like I chose wisely in listening all these years. So thank you, F This Movie.
Yes, and you know, Sonia, I got to stop right here. I don't know what the hell we're doing here. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Patrick Bronley. I love F This Movie. Some of my favorite podcasting memories have come from listening to F This Movie over the years. I never knew that they are monsters.
What?
I mean, who the hell gives a benefit for cancer? Cancer is awful. Cancer doesn't need money. Who podcasts for 18 hours on behalf of cancer? And frankly, I'm surprised that you asked me to do this. As a 2-time breast cancer survivor, that you would be involved with people giving a fundraiser for breast cancer. And anybody that stands up for cancer is just, I don't know what that kind of person is.
Smith, I think you're just...
Here, just let me finish. Somebody's got to say this. Somebody's got to stop cancer. Cancer needs to be fought. Cancer needs to be stopped. Somebody's got to stand up on behalf of the people with cancer. You know what they should do? They should have a benefit to stop cancer. That's what they should do instead of these people. Cancer can't even spend money. What is cancer going to do with the money that they're raising in this 18-hour podcast? What?
They're raising money to fight breast cancer. F This Movie is holding a benefit to raise money to fight breast cancer. Does that make sense?
When you put it like that, it makes somewhat more sense.
So when I was fighting breast cancer last year, F This Movie played a really important role. I listened to the podcast all the time, through countless appointments, while waiting for blood work, through chemotherapy, while I was recovering from my mastectomy, and it means a lot to me that my favorite podcast is doing this. And I know that breast cancer can make victims and family and friends, all of us, just feel so helpless. But there is something we can all do to help. We can donate money. F This Movie has made it really easy. You just go to their website, fthismovie.net, and click on the F Breast Cancer Podcast-a-thon tab and donate to the Magnolia Tree Foundation. Because seriously, fuck breast cancer. Smith, do you have anything you want to say to Patrick?
No.
Smith?
All right, I'm sorry.
Say it like you mean it.
Patrick, everyone at F This Movie, especially your listeners, I'm sorry.
Anything else?
I think I've said enough.
We are Chris and Sonia from DorkingOutShow.com, and we approve this message.
Thank you so much, Chris and Sonia from Dorking Out, DorkingOutShow.com. Sonia's story was very moving, and she had written a blog post about it that I thought was really incredible as a survivor. And it was so nice of you guys to record a message. Again, I reached out to some shows that we're friends with, and everyone was like,
yeah, what can I do? How do I help? Everyone has been amazing in terms of chipping in, and it's, you know, days like this that really restore your faith in humanity.
That's,
you know,
awesome. Yeah.
It's been a rough couple weeks, I think, around the world.
Yeah.
And so a day like this hopefully helps us feel like we're doing a little bit of good.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.